big enough and strong enough that they don't need to encourage him. And so a lot of times when I go out, I just say, you know, on behalf of your church, on behalf of the broader kingdom, thanks for the work that you do. Thanks for the way that you give of your time. Recently, I was sharing at the funeral of one of our overseers in the Virginia Mennonite Conference, and I was given the graveside time to share. And what I did is I looked at the family. I said, I want to thank you for the way you shared your father and your husband with the church. And I got more comments about that from other pastors that were present. This person was also a previous overseer. And also lay members coming up and said, thanks for that reminder. So thank you for what you do. I just want to make a case for the fact that money and stewardship is not a quiet issue within the biblical text. Now, there's over 2,000 texts that we can look at on this whole topic. And you compare that to about 50 texts on baptism or 200 on faith or 225 on prayer, 700 on love. So we ask the question, why so much time and attention in Scripture on money and possessions? And it's because it is on the minds of our people a lot. There's not a single pastoral care issue that you folks address as pastors or overseers that doesn't have a financial implication. You think about it. If someone's in the hospital, there's a financial implication. If there's a death, there's a financial implication. If there's a marriage and strife and you send them for counseling, there's a financial implication. So we need to be conversant in the practical realities of the challenges our people face in everyday life that include the finances. One of the things I like to say as a stewardship educator, and that's my role, Everence, I'm an educator. I don't do anything with anything else. Recognizing we need other financial tools, but that's not my gig. That's not my responsibility when I'm sent out. And so I am here to basically help remind us of what God has said through his servants in Scripture and what I think the church is to do with this resource as well. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, we're actually told about three different tithes. And when we talk about tithing, the Old Testament has three tithes. It's not just one 10%, but it's three 10%. One was for the Levites, which we're going to talk about today. One was for the benevolence ministries, for the orphan, for the widow, for the stranger and the alien. And the third was one of my favorites. It was the tithe that was to be consumed. You know, you think of all the feasts. There were seven major feasts and many others. How did they cater those? They couldn't call out to Chick-fil-A to bring in the meal. No, they brought it from their kitchens and their pantries and their herds and their gardens. That was the tithe that's to be consumed. But the one we're going to talk about is for the Levites, and it's right there in Deuteronomy 14, I believe it's verse 27. And I just wanted to highlight one more, which comes to us from Timothy, and it's Paul writing to his mentee, and chapter 5, verse 17, and we read, the elders, okay, got your attention yet? The elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, do not muzzle the ox while it is treading out the grain. The worker deserves his wages. This is a biblical principle in terms of honoring and taking care of those who take care of us. And when I get a chance to talk to lay leaders in the church, I tell them of their responsibility to care for those who care for you. And one of those biblical admonitions is to have adequate wages. Don't muzzle the ox. Now, take that metaphor for what you want, but nonetheless, it's one that we care for those who care for us. And then finally, from Romans, this is one of those hidden nuggets that we just kind of read over. It's been suggested by some scholars that the book of Romans was written as a fundraising letter. Now, I know when you read through it, it doesn't read that way. It's a theological book. But then we get to chapter 15, and here's where Paul says, to the church in Rome, but now that there is no more place for me to go in these regions, and since I have been longing for many years to see you, I do plan to do so when I go to Spain, and I hope to visit you while passing through and have you assist me on my journey. 15, verse 17, 23. Romans 15, verse 23 and following. What was Paul asking for? A slap on the back and a brown bag lunch? Chick-fil-A. He was looking for financial support to continue the ministry that Christ called him to, which was to go to Spain. Well, he never made it as far as we know. And the scholars are suggesting that he wrote the first 14 chapters in order to introduce himself, to authenticate his orthodoxy. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to stop by on my way to Spain. I hope that you can financially support me along the way. Paul, we know, is a tent maker, but he also accepted wages. He also accepted financial assistance. This is part of what we should be concerned about as advocates for pastors. That's what I consider myself to be. I am an advocate for those in part-time and full-time ministry. So, one of the things that we've been doing at Everence has been looking at this whole issue of guidelines. Now, when I talk about guidelines, that's exactly what I'm saying. Not one model is going to fit everybody, but we need kind of a baseline, a place to begin. And we have been using some of what Mennonite Church USA has developed over the years. I think CMC has been borrowing those to a certain degree. We're taking that model and making it a bit more generic so our denominations across the Anabaptist system and beyond can have a baseline. One of the reasons I think this is critically important is so that congregations that are tempted to give their pastor a $30,000 salary and call it full-time and expect the pastor to live on that are given a little bit of encouragement to take a guideline and say, well, based on the guidelines and the different calculations that a pastor or leadership team can do, this pastor ought to be at a $50,000 range. And rather than call it full-time when they're only providing 60% of the guideline, let's be honest about it. Let's call it a three-quarter time position and allow the pastor the time and space to go out and find additional income so their family doesn't have to bear the congregation on its back, on his back. So that's how a guideline can be used. And the calculations are basically based on teacher salaries. If you've ever wondered where did the numbers come from. And that's kind of a middle-of-the-road professional position. It's certainly not top of the line, I know, because my wife is a school teacher. But it's not the bottom of the line either in terms of blue-collar work. But it recognizes the professionalism, and it also tries to provide a fair wage. Are we good? Okay. Right now, I want to introduce us to Mark Esch Hirschberger. Comes with a great name. And he's coming to us from Goshen, and he's one of our IT people who had helped to create this piece that you're going to be looking at. We're going to take about 15 minutes to introduce it to you, and you might say, well, that works really well, that doesn't work, and that's fine. We want you to look at this to see in what ways can you adapt it as a tool to encourage your congregations to look at when it comes to finding a fair wage and fair percentage of responsibility for pastors. Okay, Mark, are you still with me?
Yep.
Okay, you are live, and let me turn it over to you.
Okay, great, thank you. Are you guys seeing my screen right now?
Yes.
Okay, great, just making sure. So I'm gonna take you through the online experience and show you the different tools you can use in the pastor salary guidelines. And there are two ways to get to the pastor salary guidelines online. The first is just by going to everence.com, and then you select under the financial services down here under four churches, and then it's right here, pastor salary guidelines. And then the other way that you can get there is just by typing in directly everence.com/pastor-salary-guidelines. And that'll also take you right here. So when you first get to the landing page here, you can select either the online version or the paper version. They are just anchored tags. They will take you further down the page down here. So the online version takes you to this screen, where you can see this is like the beginning of the online pastor salary guidelines. And then if you scroll down further, there is the paper version, which these are links to the various things you might need. So the pastor salary guidelines worksheet, I have open here in a different tab. This is what is downloaded, and this is what has been offered in paper form in the past. It's just been updated with numbers, new numbers, and a little bit of slightly different layout, but for the most part, is the same as what has been offered in the paper version before. And then there are also the Mennonite Church USA interpretive comments that downloads a PDF, and it, you can see all the different comments that are made about the pastor salary guidelines, different how things are calculated sometimes, or kind of explaining different aspects of that. And then thirdly, there's a pastor salary guidelines spreadsheet, which opens up an Excel spreadsheet. Downloads an Excel spreadsheet, which this is what that looks like. And this is a spreadsheet you can just manipulate the numbers, and it'll also calculate what the total salary benefits and expenses would be in Excel form. So now I will go back to, going back between the screens. I'll go further down the screen to show you some other things that you might need if you use the paper version. You, throughout the experience, you calculate the geographical units. And so in the online experience, there's a step where you calculate the geographical units. But if you're using the paper version, you will need to come to this section right here to calculate those, since we don't have, because it has all of the states and all of the counties, and it would be a huge PDF for you to try and scroll through. So we just made this easy for someone to just select Arizona and then this place, and it displays that number right there that you need for the paper version. And then at the bottom of the page, there's also two sources of help, either if you want to reach out and learn more about how the pastor salary guidelines units are calculated, or why certain things are set up the way they are, you can always contact Michael Danner. If you have any technical help, if you're not able to download something from the website, if it's not loading correctly, or if there's something, an issue that you think is stopping you from getting the online version, then you could, that contacts our tech team, and we can help you with that at Everence. So I will now step through the online version quickly here. On the left, it has the main categories that we will go through: profile, salary, adjustments, benefits, expenses, and then a summary page at the end. And just it has a little introduction here about the pastor salary guidelines and some things that you will need or might need to complete the full experience. At this point, we don't have a save function on the online experience, so you can't come back to it later. You'll want to fill it out in one big swoop. So that's why we kind of try and prepare you to have all the documentation you might need in case you don't have that. So if we begin here, I'll just go through and put in my name. And you just kind of start filling things out here. And I'll just put down, this is where I go to church, Silverwood Mennonite Church. And continue here. And then different churches have different effective dates of their agreements. And I'll just say just this year. Or actually, I guess I'll say, yeah. 12/31/2019, let's say. Let's keep continuing. And I'll just say this is, let's say the church treasurer is about whatever their name might be, or they could just say church treasurer. It's an option. And then as you can see, it's now moved on to the salary section. The total salary benefits and expenses has been calculated as the baseline value, because for 2019-2020, the salary guidelines state that the baseline salary is 31,760. That each unit value is $794. And next year there will be, as of right now, there's only 1 year because we built this last April. So, but this coming spring, probably around February, March, we're going to be working on getting this updated, and we'll have a second year for 2020 to 2021. And so as you can either compare last year's numbers, there's different things that you could compare with those from year to year. And so you'll be able to select which one of those comes through. Up here in the upper right corner, there are these little pop-out boxes that if you select them, sometimes they can tell you different. We pull most of these comments from the Mennonite Church Interpretive Comments, MCUSA Interpretive Comments. And so they've been put for each one of these steps. So I can show you a couple more of those as we proceed through the steps here. So for this one, how many years of pastoral experience? Well, I don't have any, but I will say, let's just say I have 10. And then if I have some related years of experience, some sort of role that I had in a different life. Now, if you see the this number has automatically updated. And then also if you go to see unit calculation, you can see how these numbers translate into what is added to the salary. And so the pastor salary guidelines state that up to 10 years, each year is a unit, up to 20. Then from 21 to 30, since I didn't have anything in that category, it was zero. And then my related experience is divided by 2. And so then that gives me the units multiplied by the unit value. And that's how you get that number right there. Below is also some more interpretive comments. Kind of talking about why church-related experience is counted and all that sort of stuff. So I will continue. And then we have education. And let's say I have a demon. And then also I'll just show you this one. Probably has a little table up here. You can see what different degrees have different values and explains how you get that additional salary. So I'll just continue through this. Let's say I'm a lead pastor of a team. Let's say I have 100 to 199. And again, it continues to update the number there. And then this is where you get, true Indiana, and then we'll say Elkhart County, and then it automatically produces those points. If you want to see what the unit, how many units it is, you can go up to see unit calculation. See that number there. In some circumstances, churches give a higher salary. I will just leave that blank for now. And then this is also what Beryl was talking about, the percentage of full-time equivalent FTE. So you can either change that here, or in the summary, I will show you how that can be changed as well at the end of the experience, that you can see the numbers adjust. And then here's a self-employment tax, which the pastor salary guidelines suggest 7.65 for the pastor. And then this is about housing through a parsonage. If you select yes, then more things come down. They give you options for how to measure, or also if a housing equity fund is provided, how much you would like to add to that. And that's, but to keep it, I'll just say no for now to keep that a little less complicated. And then this is also, if you did offer a housing allowance, in order for it to be tax deductible, it just has to be stated on the sheet on the agreement, so there's paperwork for it. Does the church, and then here are the benefits section. And so let's say the church offers a medical plan. I'll say, I'm actually not even sure how much, let's say 5,000 for that, for the family. Contributed retirement fund, and let's say 3%. Yes, 500. I'll just start keep adding numbers in here. A spot for continuing education. And then there is a section for any other benefits, such as a health savings account. So let's say a health savings account is offered, and let's say that is $1,000 a year. And you'll see how that description is put in the summary at the end, and I'll show you that. So let's say I drive 500 miles. And for 2019, it's 58 cents per mile. And these numbers, a lot of these numbers that are 2019, they will update when you change the year. And so if you go to 2020, 2021, if that has updated, if it's been increased by the IRS or decreased, then it will automatically do that. Enter conference, let's say 500. Professional expenses, let's say 500. And then let's say no, there are no other expenses. Let's say, but it's an option for you to list some other ones that we may have missed on in this whole section. But then you get to the summary page, and it has all the information that you entered. It has all the salary section, the adjustments, benefits, expenses. If you want to say, okay, well, let's make this person 3/4 time, then you just enter 75% here, and it automatically adjusts the number over here for the total salary, benefits, and expenses. If you say, okay, oops, I forgot, I actually, instead of working, you know, 10 years, I forgot those extra 10 that I had worked previously. So you could go to salary, and then you would have to go to this section right here. And let's say, okay, I actually had 20. And then you could go back to summary, and it will update it automatically for you. And so then finally, when you get to this page, what you can do is you can select print PDF, and it will open your print dialog box. And you could either save as PDF, or you could send it to your printer and print it off. Another option is download the spreadsheet. So what this does, it'll download the spreadsheet, and I will open up that. I'll show you what that looks like. Okay, that's one I had shown previously. Let me get the one that's filled out. So now this is the one that I downloaded, and it has all of my information filled out, has all the numbers I put in. And so then this one you could change, edit all this, and all the numbers will recalculate. You can also use this as a record, or from year to year, change some things through this. If this is easier, so you don't have to fill out again. And then one more function is the give feedback. And we would love feedback on the pastor salary guidelines. And just tell us what's useful, what you might want to see in the future, anything. Any sort of feedback is just helpful. And then it can help us kind of make enhancements in the future and figure out what the best course of action to just continue to improve this experience for everyone. So I think that's it, Beryl. If there are any other questions or...
Mark, thanks so much. It's wonderful to have an IT department. And they put a lot of hard work into translating what we had kind of on a piece of paper into this kind of calculator. So let me just open it up. I'll stand here in case Mark can't hear your question. What comes to your mind that you have about either? Yes, please.
I noticed you figured 7.65 as far as Social Security, or when Congregate's pastor
Yeah, what happens is the one recommendation we typically use is that the church pick up half of that 15%. So the other half would be considered the responsibility then of the pastor. When it comes to tax issues, we do have tax materials. You might remember a couple years ago we made some of the B.J. Worth tax manuals available to all the pastors. And this is another one that's put out by the Evangelical Center for Financial Accountability, ECFA. They're actually based in Winchester, and we've gotten to know them fairly well. And they've got some good resources there as well, some of which are free and some of this. I think this is a $10 version that they're very reputable, Evangelical Center for Financial Accountability. But that's basically half of the Social Security is what we suggest the church provide. But there again, these are all guidelines, suggestions, and it may not be possible. The church might want to pick up the whole piece and so on. So good question. Other questions? In terms of the baseline of $31,000, how does that strike you? Is that a fair baseline? Do you have any sense of what, is there any sense of consistency within CMC on that? Would that make this tool not helpful? Okay, it sounds, I mean, my sense is then we're probably all over the place and it's very, very congregational. I did want to ask Brian, I'll come to you, Dale. Okay, are you going to be coming up with your own interpretive guidelines for CMC?
Yes, the plan is to, if you noticed on there, they had Mennonite Church USA interpretive comments, is that we have our own, and we would like to put a link on our website that would have our interpretive comments, and then you hit the link, and it would take you right to this Everence calculator, so it would be a little more specific. That would mostly be about things like benefits, because as you can see, you know, going through that calculator, it helps you, you know, along the way. There's not a whole lot of extra help that's needed than what's in the little boxes. But yeah, we do plan to have our own set of interpretive comments, and we would put some things in there. I think one of the things for us, we have a lot more bivocational pastors, so needing to figure out what is, yeah, if you're paying a pastor $20,000, let's not call that full time, and let's, you know, let's help figure out what is that equivalent to, so that they can be released to provide other income that they need. I think that will be, I think this could be really helpful for us in that.
Mm-hmm. Keith?
Well, my experience has been that you asked if that base sounds right. I think that base in LMC circles has been about right, because till you add the experience value, the education value, the responsibility value, after a while the average pastor is up to $65,000 a year or more, and then people in the church say, I never earned that much, because till you add the benefits cost, yep, you could be from $70,000 to $100,000 for a salary package, and then our cohesion's sort of the bulk. So if you go much higher and the 31 for the base, I think you'd stretch some of our congregations. So I think it's about right.
Okay. And there are so many factors involved in terms of education, in terms of geography, because if you're living in Washington, D.C., you're going to have a 10. If you're in Rockingham County, you might have a 5, and that's, you know, 5 times about $800, that's $4,000 difference. So it tries to factor in the cost of living differences across the system, for better or worse, but other specific questions about the way this is put together, how it does it make sense to you?
The one thing that, just from a CMC perspective, is that I could see being a little bit of an issue is that so many of our churches are not there. I mean, we're starting to have more and more who call and ask us, mm-hmm, is there some guidelines? And this is great. Many others don't. And so I could see this being where pastors go on and they try, mm-hmm, to figure out what's reasonable for me to expect or to ask. But then it doesn't save your work. So that's, I mean, there is ways you save it in a PDF or a spreadsheet. But my vote would be to work on making it so you can go in and then you can go back in and work on it more down the road. Because I don't think it'll all happen in one sit-down meeting in CMC churches. The pastor's going to do it, then he's going to share it with one of the elders, and then it's going to go to the finance team and on around. So.
Did you hear that, Mark?
Sorry, could you repeat it? I didn't quite hear it.
Well, it's basically the save feature is something that Brian here was saying will be very important because the pastor might go on and just do some rough figuring and won't have the benefit of saving it to share with somebody else. And you know that already in terms of that save factor being something that you're going to be aiming for as well. Is that correct?
Yes, that is something that we definitely want to look into and see what options there are. It just can get pretty complicated with also figuring out like if people need usernames and passwords or if it could be somehow saved in a link, or it's just trying to figure out what the best approach would be for that. And we talked about that when initially rolling it out and found that it was probably just too much development work for the initial rollout, but it's definitely something we're going to be looking into in this next coming year and seeing if it's a possibility, because we know it's a big deal to it's a big time saver to just be able to edit things and go back to them.
And when I was a pastor, I would just download the paper version and I would just fill it in with pencil and then use that to share, and then, you know, the old eraser. And so that is a much more simple way of utilizing it. Yes, Mel. Yeah, that's probably another topic. But an important one. And Mark, just for your benefit, the question was, are there any guidelines on churches giving a church card to a pastor to use on behalf of the congregation? And that's a little bit out of the framework of what they were working on. But
yeah, I didn't come across that on the in the interpretive comments that I've seen. But yeah, I'm sure there are some out there.
I think some congregations have said, you know, we will give leeway up to $50 of discretionary spending that's always reviewed every month by the treasurer of the church. So there needs to be an immediate accountability. But I do know of situations where pastors have credit cards and there's not a written or even a verbal understanding of how that's to be used. And some churches have a credit card that stays with the bookkeeper or the secretary if the church has that, or with the church treasurer, and the pastor can, you know, with the permission of another person, access expenses that way. So it's a good question. Those are all the details that need to be talked through.
So, Mel, where would the problem have come in? The pastor was buying things that the church didn't like, or what?
Well, the salary would seem to be more specific, but if there was a credit card, and invariably some pastor didn't whoever pays the bill, they want to match the bill with the whatever they bought. And sometimes they don't have them, and they can't find them. And it just seems to be a rub with that with some churches.
Well, and a good policy is anything spent on the credit card needs to be receipted. Okay. I mean, that's for my work with Everence, I keep all my receipts, and I've got to hand them in at the end of every trip. So there is that accountability. And I think that's a fair request of any pastor. You have to hand in your receipts, and there needs to be someone checking the statements with the receipts.
Then what happens is pastors with another staff member that doesn't have a credit card, and he helps that person out, and it's not in his department. And it can be a lot of mix-ups that starts to happen with that.
Policies and guidelines. Please. Okay, very clear, very upfront. You know, if there are policies like that that you have in place, it would be interesting maybe just to pass those on to Brian, because there could be benefit in collecting what different congregations have done. We also have developed a set of kind of a template of a number of policies, anything on discretionary gifts to the church, what will the church accept, what will it not accept, on, you know, bequests. If someone dies and wants to leave something to the congregation, can anybody just do that for anything they want to purchase? Or do you have certain guidelines in place? So we've got a whole booklet on what is a finance committee's job description, for example. Do you have anything like that written down? Some good questions. Please.
I'm just curious, with the churches that you work with, what's the general response to this in terms of the amounts? Is it like, yeah, that's right, or is it, oh, that's too much, or how's that play out?
Up to this year, Everence has not been the broker of this information. This has been held by Mennonite Church USA. And so we are now becoming the steward of this calculator. And so it's at a very formative stage, and we're open to suggestions and counsel. We want it to be something that is something that could be used by as broad a base as possible. So I don't have that answer. I hear anecdotally from different churches, you know, but nothing that would I would be comfortable saying is standard. It's a good question. Joe?
So I think my experience, like we've benefited, I've benefited, this has been helpful with the MCUSA guidelines, but the financial stewardship team's policies, that would be an awesome resource.
We've got probably 10 different templates, and I can send that to Brian. And
we being your church, or Everence,
this is an Everence document.
Everence has templates.
It's in my files. I'm not sure if it's on the website. I think it is. We have a stewardship guideline manual, a digital manual, which would be under the church section. Mark, do you know what I'm talking about when I talk about that? Is that?
Yeah, I think if you go to the financial services, let's see here.
Something stewardship manual.
I'm going to go to the, and that's also one thing for the site. If it knows that you can't save on the pastor's salary guidelines, so before you leave, it asks if you actually want to leave, because then you lose your progress. So I will leave this. Stewardship.
This is another whole site of resources that are available for churches to look at.
Yeah.
Is there a, did I hear earlier this week, I think, Everence, you're working on the website to make it even more resources more accessible through the website, is that right?
Yes, this is especially true if you have advocates. How many of your churches, just as you, Pastor, have a stewardship advocate? And the benefit of that is that you have access to up to $3,000 of sharing funds that you can use for your own benevolence ministries. But they also have access to a bunch of other resources. Now, whenever they do any activities utilizing our website, it'll automatically digitally be applied to their quarterly report. Okay, this is our stewardship wheel that we've got. Okay.
Is this around the area or...
No, it's not that.
Okay.
It is on there somewhere. I think you're getting warm.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
Educational services.
Stewardship education.
There it is. Congregational Stewardship Resource Manual, the fourth one down.
Okay.
Yeah. Church Finance Manual. And then there it lists all the different templates, job description for a stewardship team, year-round congregational stewardship, online giving. Yeah, keep going down there with budgeting. Narrative budgets, a few of your churches have done that too great. It's down further, I think. There we go. Financial policies. Handling offerings of budget fundraising, special gifts, designated gifts, gifts and bequests. Okay, next line. Endowments, benevolent ministry guidelines. That's really an important one. If any of your churches help students go to any schools, if there's a Christian school or something and you have a brotherhood, sisterhood cut fund, that would be in there. Short-term mission trips. Do you have any policy on that? What qualifies as a short-term mission, and how much and how often can people apply to that? Is there another line, or is that it? That might be it. There we go. So those are some of the policies that we have in place that can maybe stimulate thinking on other policies that would be helpful in your unique situation. Anything else specifically on the guidelines? You know how to access it? Everence.com/stewardship-what?
Oh, it's actually just everence.com/pastor-sadler-guidelines. In between each word is a dash.
Oops. Okay, I think we're going to release Mark if there's nothing else. Yeah. Hey, Mark, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Go ahead and take the rest of the day off.
Yeah, all right. Have a good weekend.
Okay, see ya. Just don't let Ken know I said that.
Okay, sounds good.
Brian said I had an hour, so I'm going to take full advantage of that. What I want to share with you are some resources that you ought to be aware of for yourself and for your pastors that's rooted in our Lilly Endowment of $1 million. For those of you who may not be aware, we're on our second $1 million gift from Lilly Endowment. And we have three tracks in which this fund can be used. One is for debt reduction for pastors in your congregations. They can request up to $5,000, and half of that comes from our Lilly Endowment Fund that we are calling Pastoral Financial Wellness Assistance. The other half is matching money that we ask the pastor and their congregation to raise. We have a three-page application they have to fill out that comes to me. A team of five of us review it, and if it meets the criteria, they will be granted the gift. They have to raise $2,500, actually $3,000, because we include a 20% gross-up for any tax implication because the IRS considers it a gift, and it is taxable. So one of the forms you're getting is a fact sheet on the actual application process. And this would accompany an application, which we can send you as well. We just wanted to save a few trees and didn't give you a copy of the application. But unfortunately, the tops of each one of these is green and it looks alike. But when it says Pastoral Financial Assistance Grant, that is the one that applies to the $5,000 debt reduction grant. So any debt, might be school debt, it might be medical debt, it might be credit card debt, even a car loan, anything but mortgage. Most of us have to have a mortgage. So we don't say that that is a criteria that would qualify, but we find a lot of pastors who've been facing life situations and they've been using their credit card to pay for it, and it's easy to run that thing up if we're not careful, and we're doing a lot of grants for that kind of thing. Medical debt, the largest expenditure that leads to personal bankruptcy is medical debt across the country. And if you've ever had any medical expenses, you know how that can get ramped up, even with good insurance, even with good things going for you in that way. It's a very daunting reality. See, I think we're still getting some people. So the debt reduction grant is half of the $1 million we're using for debt reduction, and we're already halfway through that. That basically allows us to give 160 grants at $6,000 each. And then half of that comes from matching money, half of that comes from the Lilly Fund. The other $500,000 we use for education, and that's where the funding for these activities come from. So when we assist with the eMERGE, with the checking in, with the overseers conferences, that's education. And it doesn't have to all be about finances, but we do ask that there's some component on stewardship that's included with leadership development. And that's seemed to have worked out quite well, and we do that in different forms across our system. Some of you were in Sarasota here a couple years ago when you had your pastors gathering there and you went on a little dinner cruise. Remember that? Now, I know that some overseers weren't able to do because Lilly is saying this is for pastors. And the reason they say it's for pastors is because they are seeing a trend, speaking of trends, where pastors are leaving the ministry because of the lack of finance to support themselves. And so they say, we really want to focus the money on pastors. So if you're a pastor and an overseer, you qualified. But overseers alone did not qualify. But they want us to do pastor honoring activities in combination with educational activities. So the dinner cruise was the pastor honoring. And then the other part was where we provided some seminars beforehand. The other way that we are utilizing education funds is through a subsidy for a financial plan. Now, a financial plan is where you meet with a professional person, an advisor who's licensed to do a comprehensive approach to looking at your own personal situation. And that is titled Subsidy for Comprehensive Financial Planning. That's the third sheet with the small print that says Subsidy for Comprehensive Financial Planning. You'll see there's seven different categories here that a financial plan includes. It's cash flow planning, it's protection having to do with insurance, it's investment planning, retirement planning, tax planning, estate planning, charitable giving. And we have two tracks that can be utilized. One is a $1,200 fee, the other is a $1,500 fee. For both of them, we give $1,000 from our Pastoral Financial Wellness Fund, and then the pastor gets to choose between the $200 gives them up to four of these tracks, the $500 gives them up to seven of those tracks. So depending on how much you think you would value the seven versus the four, you have a little skin in the game that way as well. And that covers one full year. There's a online resource, a calculator of many sorts that you can have access to for that 1 year. If you want to sign up for a second year, there's an additional fee that would be the responsibility of the pastor, but you're not obligated to do that. So that is that $1,000, that subsidy comes from the educational fund that we have from Lilly as well. And then the third sheet here is simply a frequently asked questions about this financial program. And I won't read through that, but it has to do with the 20% gross up for taxes. It has to do if other clergy, other credentialed people qualify. It's only active pastors and congregations. Chaplains, it doesn't qualify for them. Overseers, it doesn't qualify for them. Denominational leaders, it doesn't qualify for them. It's specifically for pastors because we want to address financial challenges confronting pastors. Let me just open it up. Any other comments or questions about this program? We've had very limited applications from CMC for the debt reduction grants, and not quite sure why that is. Might be just a hesitancy for pastors to speak up. I would suggest as you, as overseers, get around and talk to your pastors. I think part of our duty is, I say overseer because I serve as a district minister in Virginia Conference. I work with seven congregations, and that's my moonlighting. And I ask my pastors, how are you doing financially, particularly if I know they're going through some kind of situation of a medical nature or schooling for kids, even debt that parents acquire because of their children going to school, that would qualify. That's family debt. So if you as a family have debt based on children's education, you can request a grant assistance up to $5,000. So I encourage you to start having these conversations with the pastors that you oversee. And I know, Steve, you want to share a little bit about your experience in meeting with pastors?
Mm-hmm. And so that has been helpful for them. And so the what we've been looking at here this afternoon, it's interesting for me to think in terms of let's free them up then. Let's not say you're 100. We are asking 100% from you if they are running a business. But they need to have that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I know that I think in the last couple of years you realize that this is an important conversation to have, and you've mentioned at one point, I believe, that when you go around just have your one-on-one visits with pastors, you're starting to ask them about their own financial
right.
situation.
That is very definitely a part
Could I just ask you, as you start asking those questions, what are you finding? Are pastors comfortable responding to that? Do they feel safe?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And a lot of them aren't experiencing
yep.
a lot of financial problems.
In some cases, it might be the full-time pastors who don't have an outside job that are feeling more stressed because they don't have the business side to help supplement the ministry.
More the case. Yeah. Yeah.
As we as a conference talk more about church planting, maybe this is something that we need to look at as we begin to groom more leaders, more teams who may be afraid to take a step because they do have some debt or something and they're launching into more church work. I think that's
particularly if you do have younger pastors that have had school, they've been to college, that's a huge issue right now.
Yeah.
About two-thirds of people graduating have some kind of debt. For about a half of those two-thirds, it's manageable. For the other half, it's not.
Right.
And we hear the horror stories about that on the news all the time. So.
You mean pastors or seminary grads?
Yes, them too, but just across the board.
Oh,
you know, even talking to our young adults in general, about their financial situation, because it's going to impact their ability to be generous. It's going to impact the stress they feel in their life if they haven't been able to get through college through scholarships and grants and parents' assistance, and they're carrying $30,000, $40,000 of debt. That's a heavy, heavy situation. And, you know, are there other places, even in our congregations, we can raise those questions with our young adults? Mel?
Mark, pastors have tried to get grants from the Lloyd Foundation, and they're from my perspective, trying to help them, but they're restricted. They haven't got an idea. They can get a doctor's degree, but they don't have an idea. They can't get it. Is that going to, from your perspective, is that going to be pretty strict down the road, or is there going to be some leeway with that?
Yeah, Lilly organization serves a lot of what we would say is the high church tradition churches where education is a prerequisite. Within our Anabaptist system, that's never been a requirement for congregational ministry, which I have always supported. But that's the majority of the denominations that they serve. So when it comes to sabbatical kinds of requests to Lilly, they do require at a minimum an MDiv or some other type of master's from a recognized seminary.
And Beryl, for the financial assistant grants, there is the requirement that they are credentialed by CMC, so there's no educational requirement. But if you have like a volunteer person or a person that's serving on staff at a church that is not credentialed through CMC, they would not qualify for the grant.
Right. They have to be credentialed, but the educational piece is not a requirement.
How about continuing education?
Not on the front end. We don't provide money to assist, you know, for registration fees. And you might say, well, that's kind of strange. You have to be in debt before you can apply. Yes. Isn't that counterintuitive? Yeah. I'm not arguing that one. Okay, well, thanks again for the time. And if there's ever anything we can be doing personally or otherwise to support you in your ministry or your congregation in some of its stewardship needs, let us know.